There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Drive Live talks technology.
If you hadn't heard already, his big mouth over there, Nick Rago from Tech Radar, is here. Happy New Year, Nick.
Happy New Year, guys.
Lovely to see you.
It's lovely to be here. Our first show of 2018.
I know.
I'm super excited.
Starting off with some news, yes. Nick. You have work news, right?
How do I have work news?
Do you not have work news? Have you not changed roles slightly? No?
Well, I mean, it's hardly radio worthy, really, to be
okay,
fair.
Okay, fine.
But all that's happening is I'm going to be doing a lot of the really high-tech, enterprise-level tech stuff coming. I mean, I'm still going to be talking a lot of the consumer tech that you guys have come to know and love on the show, but occasionally I will dip into servers and, you know, cloud computing and security infrastructure and all the things that, gives me goosebumps at night.
So all the things that neither Natalie nor I really understand.
I was just about to say, speak for yourself, Danny. You're not coming to my level now.
Can I be very honest, Danny? In the time that I've known Natalie, she's gotten so much better at tech. She can pronounce things properly. She knows what I'm talking about. She reads my footnotes and my big flashcards that I throw at her. So yeah, she's getting better.
So hopefully I'll get there as well then at some point.
Well, you know, we won't cross that bridge just yet. But okay, if you insist.
We won't peek too soon, I guess. Now, Nick, my favorite part of this is rubbish Kickstarters because they're just crazy.
I think we're going to kick off 2018 in a great
We have to start with this one because it's just absolutely fantastic. I don't want to give too much away about this one just yet, but it's kind of that thing that you didn't know you needed, really, isn't it? That's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
Rubbish Kickstarters.
So what we have on our hands... is a salt
not,
water.
Not literally.
Salt water, charger, and light.
Yeah. I think I'm hitting 2018 on a strong note with this Kickstarter, all right?
Yeah.
Basically, all of us, you know, have so many devices that we're constantly charging. We're running out of electricity at some point. So they run out of power. The battery basically drains at some point or the other. We have to, you know, try and find a power socket to charge them in. So we're basically lugging all these power bricks, you know, and wherever we go to charge our phones and things like that. So these people have basically said, you don't need to do that anymore. You can, specifically if you're going camping and things like that, you don't need to carry your power brick. You can basically carry this salt water based USB charger and light. All right. And all you do is you fill it with salt water, you assemble it again, and you plug in your USB device, whether it's a phone or anything else you want to charge via USB, and it starts charging. And at the same time, you can choose to turn on the little light, so you can use it as a little camping light.
Yeah. So we're going to play a little bit from the Kickstarter, but just before we do, to offer you some context, once the music starts playing, you'll get a sense of what they're trying to achieve here. It's people sat around a campfire with guitars and, you know, they're toasting marshmallows, essentially, is what they're doing in this. Have a little listen.
These are Hydrolite lanterns. They can give you light up to 250 plus hours and can last up to 25 plus years if stored clean and dry. And it is simply activated by seawater.
So what more could we want?
Yeah.
Basically, activated by seawater.
Yes.
They're saying all you need is a bit of seawater.
Yeah, or even just regular water and salt.
Well, okay, Nick, hold your horses for 1 second.
Make your own seawater.
She's going to tell us what we can do if we happen to find ourselves by a lake and not near seawater or just in the house. This is what you can do instead.
No seawater? Use fresh water and table salt. And you're ready to light things up, whether it's inside or outside.
I have to raise my hand like we're in the classroom because I'm just utterly flooded in disbelief, okay? She just said whether you're outside, okay, or inside.
Yeah.
Would a regular power socket not do the job?
Exactly.
Exactly my thinking. I'm baffled by this. I really am. Even if you're actually out in the woods, I mean, who's really all that bothered? If you're camping round, you know, in a nice campsite, you've got the fire on, you've got your marshmallows there, you're really that bothered about topping up your phone.
Yeah, put your phone down. Enjoy the moment.
Exactly.
Enjoy the moment.
And if you're there as well, and you've got to take salt along with this device, looking at the picture here, it kind of looks like a mix between a blender and one of these, these kind of lamps, or the lava lamps that you used to get. It looks like a mixture between those two things.
Yeah.
Doesn't exactly look easy to carry.
Well, that, you know, that may be one thing, Danny, but here's the funny part, all right? These guys have basically put this product together because they want to stop people from carrying these power packs, and they also want to think of a quote-unquote renewable way to, you know, recharge a battery on other devices. But here's the real funny thing, is this thing uses something called a power rod, all right? And the power rod is made with a particular element or dissolvable metal of some sorts, wherein when you add salt water, there's a chemical reaction that basically takes place, and that's what generates a small current and basically powers up the light. Now, I'm no scientist, but I guarantee you that it's barely going to create enough charge to charge a phone. It may just about light up this LED light, but to charge a phone, no way. There's no way that this thing is going to create that much of electricity. And the other part is this power rod apparently will eventually then wear out, and you've got to replace it with a new rod.
But Nick, okay, stick with them. So you can have the PL500 salt water charger and light, but if that is not going to float your boat, you can just get the light.
Oh.
So, you know, you can go for the cheaper option. Mm-hmm. It's smaller and you can just have a light, the AL100. You can have that.
That's amazing. Amazing.
It's, well, it's like a torch.
Yes, it's like a torch, but it's not.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. These guys wanted to sell. Okay, so how much would you pay for the salt water based light USB charger?
Nothing, because I've seen the prototype and they've got some Tupperware, some kind of plastic box that they've showed us how they're going to make it. So I'm not interested in this one.
Well, for people who were interested in investing, they were selling each one for $60.
What?
Guess how much that they've raised to make this happen?
$60.
No, they have raised $39,430.
No, so they did not.
They have. 453 backers have pledged $39,000 to make this project come to life.
That's just really, really not okay.
I are disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't get my head around it.
No.
I think the only place you might get some use for it is if you're on the beach at night time, and that's it.
But that's what you have the moon for.
Well, exactly, yeah. That's
the,
or your mobile phone. You use your mobile phone torch.
But then what happens if it runs out of charge?
That's true.
You know, they make a solid point, because I think there are some people here that don't, they don't spend any time without their phone, whether they're camping, on holiday, you know, there is no disconnect.
Those people
whatsoever.
Need therapy.
Okay.
That's what
okay.
it is.
Well, that's this week's Rubbish Kickstarter. If you do have any questions for Nick, though, do text us in. He's happy to answer almost anything in terms of technology. Text 4001 via the free messaging app, and we'll get to as many of them as possible. Last week, we had a good chat to you, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
We had a chat about some of the things, some of the devices that were popular in the sales, some of the things that you could look at.
Mm-hmm.
So, Caldy's texted and said, if this thing works, can you use it? You can use it in an emergency if the power's out.
Agree. But then what I'm debating is the amount of electricity that's going to generate is definitely not going to be enough to make the LED lights shine as brightly as they show in some of the sample photos and videos.
However,
I think it's just a hoax.
However, there is an issue. So if your power goes out in your house, you've got to then look for the cupboard with the salt in it.
Yeah.
And
AKA
then get
the kitchen.
Water. Yeah.
I know where you keep your salt there, Natalie, but I keep mine in the kitchen.
Yeah, but if it's dark, that's just another task. You might as well find a normal torch. It's like find
light
the salt,
a candle.
Mix it, put it in together, then put the rod in. It's just, it's all getting...
And by that time, the electricity's come back on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's suggesting in the situation of a natural disaster, it could be used, but I just don't know.
I don't see it happening.
No. I mean, if you want to call it, if you are interested, follow the link. No, don't really.
$60.
We're joking. Please don't. Please don't do it. But yeah, if you do have questions for Nick, he can answer most things on technology. And coming up after the headlines, Nick, there is something you're going to talk about, which is, you know, we often talk about technology and some of the gossip. I mean, one of the biggest stories we talked about last year was the fact that Google had the burger emoji incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, that was
it's hard-hitting journalism
situation.
Right there. Come on.
But this story about the drones delivering blood
amazing.
Is really
yes.
something special, isn't it? It's not just technology. This is health. This is technology working. This is, what's this called? The Internet of Things.
No, it's not. But
what's
okay.
this?
Oh, you were going
this?
So well.
I know. I was trying
this,
so
this
hard.
This is just a good story. Leave it at that. Let's go to break. We'll talk about it when we come back.
It is a really good story. We're going to talk quite a bit about that because I think it's fascinating and it just shows if it's successful here, it can be successful elsewhere. But as Danny mentioned before, you've got a couple of Apple stories you want to talk to us about too. There's quite a lot of rumours surrounding phones and also a possible takeover with Netflix. Is that right?
It is. Some good stuff coming after the break.
Yes. So get your questions in 4001 via the free messaging app, or you can call us 423 1010.
Drive Live talks technology.
So our guest today is Nick Rago from Hello. Tech Radar. How are you?
Good. I'm very proud that you're able
Nailed
to get
it.
That now. Yeah.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Don't worry. We were just talking about batteries 1 second, and we had a text in, no name on this one, but it just says, I think you were too dismissive of the rubbish Kickstarter. Okay. Sometimes if you can charge your phone while stranded somewhere, it could save your life, or maybe in natural disasters, like hurricanes and earthquakes. I'm not surprised it got funded. Oh, that is from Ashraf. But this other one said old batteries used to have the same technology, an electrode and chemical water. These can be quite powerful depending on the size, like old car batteries. These were replaced by dry maintenance free batteries. Nothing new, I believe.
Yeah, my biggest thing with the Kickstarter was just how, you know, they were the tech that's in the actual device is questionable, is all I'm saying, is that the amount of power they're promising for a phone and for a light, it seems very, very unlikely. That's all I'm saying. I mean, yes, definitely something like this would be great in an emergency scenario if your phone is dying and things, but I just think what they're promising is not what they're going to deliver.
Yeah, I question the convenience of it as well. I think it's a good idea to try and have something which is going to be environmentally friendly and an easy way to charge your phone, but If you can be in an emergency situation without having water there, without having salt there as well.
Yeah.
So, but I understand that's your point. What about a kind of different technology then for this? Where do you think in a few years' time you might see kind of these portable phone chargers that may be solar powered?
Do you know what?
Something like that?
That could be an option. But again, you didn't have to take into account it's only sort of chargeable during the daytime when the sunshine. You can't charge it at night or in overcast areas. There are actually, I think it's a phone case that you can, I don't know if it was on Kickstarter or whether you can actually buy it, where at the back of the phone case, there's a removable crank that you can pull down and you can start turning the phone case to generate a small current and start charging your phone.
You'll probably
be charging for 2 months to get a full charge, but it does exist.
My family live in quite a rural part of Jamaica, and I remember years and years ago we got them a wind-up radio, and that really did work.
Yeah,
but a radio takes up tiny bit of power compared to a phone.
Yes.
So I can't even imagine, and the crank was quite large, but can you imagine on a phone? It'd be tiny.
It's tiny. Yeah. So that's why I said you'd be cranking for a month before you can get a full charge. That's probably what it is. But those kind of things do exist.
Now, apologies if you guys spoke about this last week. I can't recall exactly when the story broke, but when Apple admitted to kind of slowing down all their iPhones because of the aging batteries. I want to get your thoughts on this, this story, Nick, because it's something that people have discussed and maybe thought was going on for a long time without really there being much maybe evidence for it.
Yeah.
Were you surprised by this story coming out, and do you think it's only Apple who are culpable here? Or?
Well, I think Apple is probably the sort of in the strongest light, because they've actually come out and said that they, you know, what they're doing, you know, in all honesty, is merely trying to figure out ways to make sure that older iPhones, you know, when they upgrade to the new iOS, aren't powering down as quickly, because obviously newer versions of iOS will have more features which demand more power, and obviously older phones with older batteries don't necessarily keep up properly. So that's what they were doing. They're basically trying to manage the battery life better. However, in the long run, that was obviously slowing down people's phones and causing you know, terrible performance issues and things like that. So the fact that Apple have come out and said this straight up, that this, yes, they were sort of throttling batteries just to make sure it wasn't running out quickly, is a good thing. But in the same way, they've sort of shot themselves in the foot, because they are basically admitting that they were throttling this. And for years and years, people are saying that, why does my iPhone always slow down when a new iPhone is on the market? It just makes no sense. And basically, people have tried to make that sort of corroboration, and now Apple have said, yeah, we are kind of doing this to your phones. And they have basically said, okay, you can take your older phones in for a $29 battery replacement, but I don't think that's enough. I think it's just the damage is done, and Apple are now facing, you know, the full fury of consumers, and a couple of lawsuits are headed their way as well. Whether or not they're the only ones in the market doing it remains to be seen. I don't think any other Android manufacturers have or will kind of say that, you know, yes, we are doing the similar things in our products. To the best of my knowledge, I have always been on Android. I have jumped from phone to phone year after year, and I've never come across a scenario where, you know, an older Android phone that I've had has dramatically slowed down. In instances where my, you know, Samsung or HTC or whatever phone I'm using has become slow, I've simply backed up my data, just formatted the phone and started again, and that always seems to breathe new life into it. So it's more like a software update, just basically temporarily slows it down, but once I clear the phone, it works so much better.
And I guess that brings us round then to the rumours surrounding Apple and more phones. And I guess they said, you know, there's a rumour that there's three more phones to come this year. And one of the selling points is new larger batteries.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a little bit of a slap in the face.
Yeah, it is. And I think a lot of times Apple, you know, they take a lot of the consumer feedback on board. They look at what the market trends are, what people are asking for. And yes, obviously a bigger battery, we'd love that. So we have to stop carrying around portable chargers or saltwater-based chargers for that matter from Kickstarter. But yeah, what rumors are saying is that Apple may be looking to launch as many as three phones this year with a 6.5-inch screen and a 3,300 to 3,400 milliampere battery for a larger, which is basically the largest battery size that Apple has to date, with the iPhone X coming in at like 2700 milliamp hours. So this is one of the things they're going to be launching. We're also possibly looking at a 5.8-inch phone. It will be with a 2900 to 3000 milliamp battery, and then also another iPhone with 6.1-inch LCD display. So that's three different sizes for people, depending on what they feel comfortable with. Personally, I've got a 5.2-inch. I think it's kind of the sweet spot for me. Anything bigger than that, you're sort of bordering on those phablet phones. So I think that's kind of what Apple is doing. They're launching these three phones to look at what people want, whether it's more battery life or bigger screen real estate. And we're really just going to have to see whether or not Apple will follow through with these three phone launches.
But even the rumors of three new phones, if someone was considering at any point getting an iPhone 8, it just makes it even more redundant.
It does. I think this is what happens when Apple launches a new phone. They have to be very, very careful about how and when they're launching it, because they basically risk making their previously launched or recently launched phones defunct within just a couple of months. So it really is kind of a bad idea to launch three phones. I think they should just pick one phone size that they think would do well in the market and just go for that.
And do you think as well they'll be all around about the same level? Because obviously Apple launched, what, three phones just a few months ago, but then you had one, the iPhone 10 or the iPhone X, depending on how you say it. I'm sure you'll correct me on that one in a minute.
It's 10.
As well as iPhone 10, then along with the iPhone 8 Plus and the iPhone 8. Are they going to, do you think one of these phones will be the equivalent of the iPhone 10 in the fact that it'll be a really premium handset with a price to match, in a sense?
I mean, who knows? We may see the iPhone 10 Plus already and the iPhone 8 SE. So there's no really way to pinpoint where Apple is going with these phone designs. If they feel that these kind of phone sizes and battery lives is what people want, then they're going to simply pitch it into the market. The beauty about Apple is that people who are loyal to the brand will queue up, will upgrade their phones, will trade them in for something else. So it's a question of whether or not Apple goes ahead with the three designs, or if they just launch one single phone and maybe do a minor upgrade on the phones they launched last year. We'll have to wait and see.
I'm wondering as well if they'll do an iPhone 9 or not. Are they just going to skip that altogether?
They just
now?
Skip it. It's gone.
These ones are going to be 11,
yeah.
Are they?
10 is where it's at. Yeah.
10S and 11.
Yeah,
there we
exactly.
go.
Exactly. That's where
first.
It is. Yeah.
Okay, if you have any questions for Nick, text us 4001 or via the free messaging app. I guess we can stay with Apple for this next story, Nick, though, because...
It's a weird story, though.
Yeah, I mean, I read the headline and then I read it properly and I thought, oh God, there's a bit of difference here. Because, you know, you hear, oh, you know, Apple are likely to acquire Netflix. What they actually mean is we've done some research.
Yeah.
We've looked at the numbers and we look at the possible investments Apple can make, and they're in a position to do something with Netflix.
Yes,
which
yeah.
is not quite the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, when I saw this headline, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, Apple wants to buy Netflix. Where did that even come from? But like you said, they've looked at the numbers, and basically Apple is in a very cash heavy position. And so with the way that certain tax cuts have been laid out in the US recently, they are very, very cash heavy at the moment. So they essentially have the assets wherein they could actually go and make an offer to acquire Netflix. Now, Netflix and Apple have sort of been in the same market, in the sense that Apple has been very strong with their iTunes offerings. So they've got movie and TV show rentals over there. People love iTunes. But I think a lot of people have slowly but surely drifting away from iTunes to services like Amazon Prime Video, Hulu, and Netflix, because people enjoy a lot more of the streaming content available on these services. So if Apple were to approach Netflix and basically acquire their catalog, that would be an absolutely insane deal, because Netflix as a company itself is worth a lot of money. And you have all of the power of Netflix's production house. They keep producing these amazing original Netflix TV shows and movies. That original content would come into Apple's fold. So if Apple has, you know, the chance to throw their weight around, Netflix would be the smartest acquisition for them, because it just makes complete sense, because they would essentially then eat up all of that streaming market, and they could take on the likes of Amazon Prime and Hulu and other streaming services.
It's a fascinating kind of area at the moment, isn't it? Because you were talking a few weeks ago, weren't you? Was it Amazon who is looking to create a bit of a YouTube
their version
rival
of YouTube.
In
yeah.
a sense?
Yeah.
So I suppose it comes as part of the same deal. But would you expect to see some of Apple's competitors, namely Samsung, look to do something similar or not? Or do they not have the kind of clout
yeah,
to be able to do so?
I think a lot of the other competitors against Apple just don't have that kind of cash flow that Apple does. I mean, the likes of whether you're looking at LG or Huawei or Samsung, any other manufacturers, for them, it isn't a viable purchase. With Apple, because they have an existing ecosystem that they can then further boost by the acquisition of Netflix, it makes the most sense. We're not necessarily looking as Apple as just the iPhone manufacturer. We're looking as Apple in their larger ecosystem and the sort of entertainment they offer. For them, Netflix would be a very, very smart but crazy deal to acquire, that's for sure.
Well, I'm already looking forward to the Netflix Steve Jobs special series yeah. that will be surely developed if Apple completes this what, 40%? Chance and yeah. goes through with it anyway, but it's fascinating. Yeah. Can you see that happening? Apple Netflix?
Yeah.
Apple,
I can imagine yeah. it. What I wonder though is how will Apple want to monetize it, because Netflix is a single subscription once a month, and the way iTunes works is they often want you to buy a film or yeah. a series, yeah. a bit like Amazon Prime. So you wonder that there's a limited amount of things that you're able to access, but some things you have to pay for.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, will Netflix users, if that ever did happen, feel comfortable with the change? And if the change went ahead, what would that look like?
Because yeah, I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about Netflix is that you pay the one price and you get whatever's in the catalog. Mm. But at the same time, with iTunes, you can pick and choose what you want to pay for, which, like I said, iTunes has been hugely successful for certain people that just want to browse the catalog and only pick and choose the TV shows, all the music, all the movies that they want to own. Mm. Whereas with Amazon Prime, for example, you get things that are included in your subscription, but you can also then go ahead and further buy content that isn't necessarily available in your Prime subscription. So there's a lot of choice out there. Again, with Apple, it would just be an almost crazy move. It'd almost be like, okay, we have this couch, we have this, you know, money we've literally found lying under our couch. We're just going to throw it at Netflix and we're going to buy them up. It's more like a power play rather than a smart investment, I think, at some point. But it would just be purely fascinating to see. Like you said, how would Apple be able to monetize something like Netflix? Would they monetize it in the first place? Would they just leave it sort of, once you buy a subscription, you're just happy with that? Or would they introduce other sort of subscriptions to look for?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to think about. Just going off this one, just referring to this again, that one of the reasons that they're talking about this happening is tax relief. It's tax relief, yeah. and that's pure and simple. Apple are cash rich, cash heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't want to pay the tax, so investing in something is looking more and more likely in order to avoid a massive tax bill and to still see that money working for them. So kind of interesting. Just before we go now, Nick, there is a quick question in for you. We've talked about this phone before. It's the OnePlus 5T. They're asking, is it a good phone, because they're thinking about buying it?
Yeah, this is actually, you know, every time I've people have said, okay, I need a phone that is sort of quite affordable and isn't necessarily one of the big players, what do you recommend? And I always say that OnePlus is a great brand because the user interface is very clean, it's near stock Google, has fantastic camera and processing powers. It is a good phone. So if you're looking at the OnePlus 5T, it is a good phone. I've personally not reviewed it. I think one of my colleagues has checked it out instead, but it is a very good phone. So if you don't necessarily want to go with the likes of Samsung or LG or Sony or any of the market players who want something different, then definitely OnePlus is a fantastic phone to look for.
And is it in the same kind of level? Is it a premium phone or is it more of a mid-range price-wise?
No, price-wise, I mean, you can get the OnePlus 5T, I think, on Souq for about 2,200 dirhams, which is not too bad. Mm. I think it is priced competitively versus, say, the Samsung S8 or the Xperia or any of the other market-leading phones. So it is quite affordable and it offers everything else that other premium phones have. So I think it's a good phone that you should definitely have a look at.
Okay, coming up, we will talk a little bit more about phones. We're going to see if the Android ecosystem can exist without Google. I think lots of people are quite fed up with the way Apple and Google sort of have control over everything. We'll talk about that, and we will come back to the drone story we mentioned a few minutes ago. If you do have questions for Nick, though, he's ready to answer them. His pronunciation of Huawei is much better than mine. We've already had a compliment on that. And yes, he's ready to answer the questions. Text us 4001 via the free messaging app. Or if you want to get on the phone, you can call us 4001. 2-3-10-10.
Drive Live talks technology.
Okay, so compliments to Nick on his pronunciation, but I wanted to come to this story because I have to say, Nick, this really is unbelievable.
It's a great story.
It's you know, we hear lots about drones. We've got new rules here in the UAE about drones. So you know, drones are with us and they're here to stay.
Yes.
But this is an example of drones doing something absolutely incredible. We know a few years ago they trialed drones delivering pizzas across campuses in America and the like. But this is something pretty special, right?
Yeah. So this is basically a very, very cool story that I've picked up. And they're dubbing it almost Uber for blood, where in Rwanda, trying to get blood supplies to hospitals is actually a serious issue that a lot of these hospitals are facing, wherein blood delivery can take about 4 hours to reach from a hospital or a blood bank to where it's needed. And basically, a startup in Silicon Valley called Zipline is partnering with Rwandan's health ministry to use drones to deliver more than 5,500 units of blood to over the past year to hospitals in the region. And they've basically cut down blood delivery times from 4 hours to an average of just under half an hour. And that is a fantastic, you know, win for drones, because a lot of the time we look at drones and think of them as purely recreational things to take photos and nice, you know, aerial photos and videos of our vacations and things like that. But this is basically real life application, wherein you've got a drone carrying a cardboard box with, you know, packets of blood. And essentially, when the drone reaches a drop zone, it opens its payload and it drops down with a paper parachute that basically brings the cardboard box to a safe drop zone, and then the hospitals can basically just unpack it and take the blood to wherever it's needed. It's a fantastic, fantastic initiative, and I absolutely love it.
It's probably extremely cost effective too, if you consider that was a journey that was having to be made by road, take longer. Two members of staff at least needed to make that journey. It's probably something that really will save money in the long term. And you think that the partnership, obviously, that they're setting this at a price which is helping the hospitals too.
Yeah.
It's not prohibitive, I guess.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the places in more developed countries, obviously, you're hindered by a lot of red tape. You're hindered by obviously busy skies with, you know, aircraft and other things flying around. And in places like Rwanda, where you don't have that much of regulation and things, just, you know, to get through, it's easy to make these devices or make these drones sort of just go out into the sky and start these deliveries. And I think it's sort of the first step. I know that when Drones for Good was happening here in the UAE, there was one company that came up with an idea of a sort of a drone ambulance, where if you dial emergency services, a drone would be sent to you and it would have a webcam and it would have two pads on it. And so basically a drone would land next to a patient, you would attach the pads to the patient, and then a doctor would basically use the webcam to sort of video conference with you to monitor remotely the patient's vitals and basically give you advice how to make the patient more comfortable, do CPR if necessary, before emergency services would actually arrive, which is a fantastic initiative as well.
Yeah, I think this is a great story, this, because it's obviously a bit of a controversial new technology. I know a lot of people are unsure about drones, and there's been issues of a privacy, for example. I know certainly over in Los Angeles, a lot of photographers were sued, weren't they? Or they were told off for kind of, you know, using them around celebrities' houses.
Yeah.
But then, like you mentioned, you already mentioned it here in the UAE, a couple of other stories over the last couple of months that have come out, where Abu Dhabi police, they're set to use drones to help locate missing people. And police here in Dubai are set to use drones to help to monitor traffic as well. So it's a case of maybe just using new technology like this.
It is,
for the benefit of society.
Yeah, I think in the UAE, it's great that we have regulations and people are being monitored when they purchase drones, and they have their, you know, special permissions and licenses and things like that. Because at the end of the day, this is still something that could cause a lot of trouble if used incorrectly. So that's why it's important we have these regulations in place in very populated cities like Dubai and the rest of the UAE. In places like Rwanda, obviously, there are a lot of really, really good applications. There was, a conservationist that was using drones to monitor poaching and was basically using them to tag places where poachers were spotted to send teams out to try and deter poachers from hunting wild game. So I think there are a lot of instances where drones can definitely be used for good purposes, and, you know, these guys using it to deliver blood is just a fantastic, fantastic measure.
I know there's a few more details in it, saying that the hospitals serve about 500,000 people. There's 12 regional ones, and you know, they're getting that blood so quickly, because the danger is when people give blood and it's not used in time, it's spoiled.
Yeah, it can spoil.
So
yeah.
It's kind of making sure there's enough in the right place at the right time to stop that as well.
And they're expanding it not just to include blood, but it's also delivering medication. So you know, necessary drugs that are required for patients for whatever they're suffering from, you can get these medications to remote areas where you don't necessarily have the best roads or best, GPS signals to find out where you're going. So I think delivering these things by drones is a fantastic step forward, definitely.
Okay, question we got through here on our website, DubaiEye1038.com. I recently got an Android phone, the S8, after having previously had an iPhone. However, I also have an iPad and I want to know how I can sync between the two devices with things such as notes and the calendar. And I'm assuming, obviously, you're going to have to use maybe different apps for this then instead of what you might have usually used on Apple.
Yeah, well, you can use apps like Evernote or something similar like that. But basically, once you have a singular account, you can basically sync between the various devices, whether it's on iOS or Android. So there are a couple of note-taking apps like that. Let me just check if Evernote comes on Android. I think it does. But you can just use one of those apps and essentially whatever you sync, whatever you put into it, it'll be available on Android and iOS. It does come for Android, I've just checked. So if you download Evernote, you can keep your notes and everything synced between your iPad, your iPhone, and your Android device.
It's an interesting question, that, isn't it? Because you get so many people who will feel that they've got to stay within the same ecosystem in a sense. If they've got an iPhone, they feel like if they want to get a tablet, it has to be an iPad in a sense, and maybe that's not really the case.
Yeah, I mean, you're free to choose whatever you like, but I think some people are just comfortable staying within one ecosystem, and then they feel that mix and matching one or two other ecosystems will cause problems, and it can cause problems if you don't know how to sync them properly. But I think 9 times out of 10, if you use the right apps and you've done a bit of research, you can do it flawlessly.
My reticence, though, is in changing a phone, is that I just can't be bothered to learn something new. I quite like
you.
Being comfortable.
That's just
with
you, Natalie.
I don't think it is, though. I think lots of people, it's not necessarily just Apple users. Lots of people are just loyal because they can't be bothered.
I think it's familiarity. I gave a friend of mine who's an iOS user, I gave him my phone and I have a Samsung, and he's like, how do I get to the apps? I'm like, you just press the middle button and all the drawers, all the app drawer comes up. So he didn't even know how to do that. So yeah, I think it's just familiarity, and I think that's what people have the most problems with.
I'm quite the opposite, to be honest. I quite get bored after a while with a certain kind of operating system, in a sense, and I quite like the excitement of having something new and figuring it out, and because they both have different looks, don't they? You've got widgets that you get on Android, whereas Apple is obviously very basic and simple and easy to use, in a sense, but at the same time, I don't know, there's different benefits to each one, isn't there?
There is, and that's why you have the Android camp versus the iOS, because there are pros and cons for both in both camps. But if you want simplicity and I think straightforwardness, you go with iOS. If you like having a little bit more fun with your phone and tinkering around a bit, then go with Android, which is why I've stuck with Android all these years, really.
Okay, very briefly then, I guess, Nick, we're going to talk about the Android ecosystem. Is it possible to have a future without Google?
It is. Basically, someone is creating a Android-based mobile operating system called Elo, and it's created by Gael Duval. And what Duval wants to do is essentially take out things like the Google Play Store, any sort of Google services that come baked into Android, and offer his own version. So there will be sort of like an open market where you can get Android apps and everything without having to, sign up through a Google account and things like that. Whether or not it actually kicks off is a different story. He has put the OS on Kickstarter, funnily enough, for funding. It is currently at nearly €49,400 funded, out of which he won €25,000. So it is fully funded, which is great. But whether or not this can actually work, it remains to be seen. Because I think when you disconnect yourself from Google in this way, you kind of open yourself more so to a couple of security issues. Because when you have Android that's been policed by Google, you know it's getting the latest security measures. You know that everything is up to date. So you're then having to bank on someone else outside of Google to make sure that your operating system is up to date. So whether or not Duval has the workforce, behind him to do things like that, remains to be seen. It's an interesting idea. Whether or not, again, he's raised money for it on Kickstarter, he's fully funded, whether or not he can keep up with the promise of having a truly good, true Google-free ecosystem remains to be seen. But it's an ambitious undertaking, that's for sure.
I think it's interesting that he's saying he doesn't want this to be a profitable business. He just wants this to help people.
Yeah, no.
I mean, do we believe that?
I don't believe a single word of that.
No, not at all. Well,
not happening.
I think for me, again, familiarity. So if I had an Android and someone said, well, I've got a different operating system, come to my side, I just don't know how comfortable, A, as you've mentioned, security, but B, I've learned something, I'm familiar with it. Why would I choose to jump ship?
Yeah, I think it's really just targeting people who have been using Android and are a little bit tired of Google collecting information on them. Or, you know, if you're super paranoid about Google monitoring your apps and what you're putting into your Gmail and things like that, that's basically who he's building it for. He's building it for people who are, you know, who want to cut out the middle person, which is Google, and just have the Android OS without anyone spying on them.
You got to wonder as well what kind of chance he really has here, because we've seen other companies, I mean, Microsoft tried to have their own kind of system, didn't they, you know, a few years ago. And if Microsoft couldn't pull it off, then, you know, good luck to the guy, but still, it doesn't fill you with confidence.
That's why I said it's very ambitious idea. And whether or not, I think there have been people in the past who have done stuff like this and eventually have had to close because it just isn't viable. Because there is a lot of development, a lot of energy that it goes into, you know, keeping this kind of OS up to date. So whether or not he will succeed remains to be seen. But I think it's very much shot in the dark, if I'm being very honest.
Well, that's Nick's verdict. Stay tuned for next week. We'll have a critique of another product.
Yes.
No, that's all we've got time for on Drive Live Talks Technology. Nick Rago from Tech Radar, a pleasure to see you.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.